Blog Talk Radio.
You still there, David? Something must have happened to him. He'll come back.
All right. While waiting for David to come back, I'm just going to go ahead and open up with our reading. And each time we come on these airways, we do a reading from Daily Motivations for African-American Success by Mr. Dennis Kimbrough, who's also the author of Think and Grow Rich and Black Choice. And the reading for today goes like this. You get out what you put in. My mother told me I was capable of doing anything. Be ambitious, she said. Jump at the sun. Zora Neale Hurston, writer. Reading for the day goes like this. We yearn to be needed, wanted, and loved. We want to be important. We need appreciation, satisfaction, recognition, acceptance, and fulfillment. Remember, to the degree you give others what they need, they will give you what you need. This calls to mind the man in a desolated mountain region, was a laborer 6 days a week and a preacher on the seventh day, and served a very small rural congregation tucked far into the hills. The only monetary compensation he received came from the morning offering. One Sunday, his six-year-old daughter attended the service with him. Just inside the door of his house of worship stood a table, and on it rested a collection plate. As they entered, the little girl saw her father place a half a dollar into the wicker basket before the rest of the congregation arrived. When the service ended and the last member departed, preacher and his daughter began to leave. As they reached the door, both peered expectantly into the collection plate and found that the only offering was the half a dollar he had donated. After a short silence, the little girl said, "You know, Daddy, if you had put more in, you'd have gotten more out. You now have the key to success that will unlock many doors that would otherwise be closed. Follow the advice of the young girl. You can only succeed and achieve to the extent that you give and share of yourself. If you feed others, you will never go hungry." And that's our reading for the day. I thought it was a very profound reading in terms of, you know, putting more in and you get more out. And, you know, and that goes a long ways in life, you know. The more we put in, the more we'll get out. And, you know, and that's a great prelude into the dialogue or conversation that we're going to have tonight about generations and what people have done, doing, or haven't done. And, you know, and so I know that there's a lot of people out there that's questioning what's going on, who's doing what, or have they done anything. And, you know, that's a very important dialogue to have. So, David, you back yet?
Yeah, give me a second.
Okay, all right.
I'm switching the computer now. One computer, I'm in the same room with two computers. One don't have no internet, and the other one do, and they're on the same system. I don't know what to say about that one, but
I already done our reading for the day.
Okay, let me try to get in this thing. So give me one more second. And hope I can get in here. I'm running around like a plucked chicken. And give me one more second here. So in any case, ladies and gentlemen, Brother Satavi, you know this new technology, all things can and will happen. And it's so strange that all of this happened as soon as the time for us to come on. And so I don't know, but something kind of spooky here. But in any case, welcome to the podcast. And I'm going to let a few more people in and get this show started. I mean, it's already started. Thank you, brother. That's why it's so good to have backup people in your corner who got your back. And as Brother Satavi was eloquently saying, that tonight we're going to have a lively discussion about what people are saying. Now, this is what I've been hearing all through the internet, and I think I might have sparked it myself, because I put out a flyer about a week or two ago, and the flyer had at the top of it, say, soldiers who have 15 years or more in the struggle, who've been doing their thing or been on the front lines for our people for a good period of time. And I had about 25-something people on there, and I could have had two or three more sheets of paper, people that are still alive, people who are still putting in work, as the young people say, people who have dedicated their life, half their life, most of their lives, helping people like me and you. And this I know because I was out there with them. I had locked arms with some of them over the years. We had stood in the streets. We had stood in the gap. We stood here and there so that we could uplift us, each other. But what people are saying today, well, this is what I'm hearing, is that some of the younger folks saying, based on some of the posting they're doing and some of the live events they be sharing, and saying, we old folks, I guess the people 50, 60 and above, need to just get out the way and make room for the young folks. The Jackson 5 used to have a song out there, we got to make way for the young folks, and which we do. But, and then they saying, these same young folks were saying, the people about the millennium, and they really kind of bad-mouthed them. They were saying that, they were saying, oh, wow, this thing, all kinds of crazy stuff happening on these computers. They were saying this, that the millennials are very well educated. You know, they got a lot going on, but they are brainwashed. They're brought into this society system. In other words, they act more like the other people than they act like their own people. And I don't know what I'm not saying. I know I'm not interpreting this in the right manner. In other words, they don't act like the villagers. They swing more the other way, where they're not really accepted, but they try their best to, you know, go along to get along. And so and the conclusion I came up with, I'm solution oriented. And yes, you know, a lot of people are here there, because I see from where I stand, I am so pleased with a lot of our young folks. I mean, they're making waves, they're making noise, but I was young once myself. I remember when we used to have this saying back in the 60s that we have to make way for the young folks. Not that ain't what, that's, you know, that's what the Jackson 5 say, but we had the thing in the 60s was saying that we used to call people over 30 years of age the generation gap. Anybody over 30 didn't know nothing. They were just old school. They was outdated. And we didn't want to hear nothing they had to say. Because from our point of view, they didn't do anything. Because they let other people mess over because they were conservative, in which they was. You know, we had all, they, our parents had all types of jobs that was beneath them. Because that's the only thing they would give them. And even still to this day, it's pretty much the same way, you know, but it's just in different forms and fashion. Sometimes, you know, they just more clever with the way people do things. But in the millennials, they are the ones, man, I'm very well pleased because it's people from my generation who made a way for them to go to school, to get the knowledge that they have today, to learn the new technology, who suffered. There's people right on here I know put their blood, sweat, and tears for their children to get this education. And now they've been telling you in some form or fashion, you need to get out of my way now. You don't know now. You old. You don't know. You, I know more than you now. And you know how it is. I, you know, those of you on here, you know where I'm coming from. But in a society, there's room for all of us. And that's why I think God made it that way. He made babies. He made young men and women. He made teenagers. He made the seniors. You know, we had to go through these life cycles because they all had their parts in it. And just like me, I don't know about the rest of you, there's a saying, when I was a child, I thought like a child. You know, and I was just telling a good friend of mine, I say, boy, you know, that old saying, youth is wasted on the young. Because if I thought the way I do now and out when I was very young, I would be one educated young man. I would have my head in all types of books, and so I would try to learn everything I could, you know, was open up to. And because I didn't know what the future was going to be like. The man I done lived my life, I done been there and done that, as some of us may say. And I've been through a multitude of obstacles, which they're going to have to go through. They have to find out for themselves, just like we had to. But I'm going to open up the call because this is the discussion tonight, because it's a lot of sayings going around on the Internet that each generation, and, you know, especially I'm talking about Black, you know, that's my format. That's our format with the National Black Unity Movement. We don't put that in a group of race of people. All we're trying to do is uplift our own and try to encourage one another so that we can equal the playing fields. You know, I'm not prejudiced in the sense of a way that I don't like you because of the color of your skin or nothing like that. But the point I'm trying to make is this is an even playing field. We have been discriminated against, and it still goes on, and it will continue to go on, and nobody's going to do for us what we're going to have to do for ourselves. And so I'm going to be hosting an event. It's going to be my coming out event because I've been locked down for almost over a year. And I still got sick. I still caught COVID, no matter what. But, you know, but now it's time for me to come out. And I'm going to have an event at our social club. And it's a reason why I'm having it there. Because as soon as you walk, it's a historical place. But I'm talking about for us old folks. I'm talking about my grandfathers and great-grandfathers. That, you know, people at their ages have been through the our social club. That institution is over 100-something years old. Matter of fact, it is now the oldest men clubs in the country, I believe, right now as we speak. And so it's very and when you walk into the facility there, on the wall you see pictures, plaques, all sorts of historical facts about some of the people who participated in that club. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to bring a lot of those people that I mentioned earlier that's still on the battle, like Brother Satire on here, Bill Gooden, who's been out there fighting 30, 40 years and beyond that. I'm going to bring people like them on and share a little bit with our millennium and our younger folks, because I'm going to have youth organizations there and to have them to bring their youth to this event. I'm going to have the millenniums there. I'm going to have all of us there, men, women. And I want the elders to share their story, what they've done, why they did it, and why they continue to do it. I want the millennials to tell people what their parents have done and what they're doing, making a way for the younger folks that they're bringing up, how significant they are to them. And I want the younger folks to understand, I know you're young, you're hungry, how they say they're thirsty. They want to get there quick, fast, and in the instant, because that's the way information is being put out there now. Everybody, this is an instant world. You know, everything quick, fast, and in a hurry. And if you don't get it now, and it's also about me, myself, and I, they don't understand sometimes what unity is all about because they're young. You know, and I understand, and they've been fed through media about me, myself, and I. And so that's why they think that way. And so I want the purpose, again, the purpose of this thing so that they can get information from us and by us. I want them to see living legends who stood the test of time so that they can even open them up and say things like I used to say, when I used to call people generation gap. I can imagine what my parents looked at me the way they looked at me when I tell them they didn't know nothing, you know. But, you know, I couldn't say too much today because our parents, you know, they come from old school. You know, they go outside your head. You come, you can whisper it or something, but you couldn't go the way they young people come up to people, the way they talk today. You know, that's a different time and a different place. But in any case, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to start with my brother, Satavi, because this brother inspired me so much back in the day. I told this story so many times because him and his wife, they still inspire me. I met them up on Wildwood Parkway. I live in Baltimore. It's a place called Emerson Village. That's where I kind of grew up at. And I met this couple way back, I don't know how many years ago that was. I know 30, 40 years ago sometime, but it was back there. And they opened up their home and turns it into like a recreation center, a dance hall. Teach children how to dance and young men. I mean, and I observe a lot. They were so into them young people, but in reverse, them young people were so into them. Even later on, as time went by, when I had my own children, and that's how long ago, because my children weren't even born when I first met them. They weren't even born then. And when they came of age, I think my son was about 4 years old, and my daughter, she was probably about 11 or something. And I used to send them to their daycare. And this is the first time I ever seen my son, because I ever had to sneak away from him, to get away from him when I used to take him places to leave him at daycare or to a babysitter. A day after the job, he's got a hold of him. I took him to this facility. He just ran on off, didn't even go back at him. I said, man, what are these people teaching these children? And what they doing up here, but you know, but I do because they love what they were doing. They was committed to what they were doing. They cared about people and it was their call and they were doing that thing, as we say. So Brother Satavi, this is what I want to ask you.
Yes,
and,
sir.
And it's a simple question. Now, like I said before, I just told everybody how long you've been out there, but why are you still out there doing what you're doing?
Well, number one reason is, you know, we all need to be able to leave a legacy. And so part of what we do, me and my wife, is towards building that legacy. And so, you know, that's, I would say, the reason why we're not as active as we used to be because, you know, hey, I'm 68, going on 69, my wife's 65. And I would say out of all that we did, I mean, I know we influenced at least well over possibly like 10,000 youth throughout the city back during our heyday. In terms of the spillover effect, we ended up with a program we ran in the village, and then we did a program for a lady in the, let's see, what committee is that? Up off of Papa Grove. I'm trying to remember what community that is up off of Papa Grove. But anyway, we did a program at our center. And the highlight was we ran two summer camps. And then we also ultimately ended up expanding to New Orleans and ran a program in New Orleans. But the biggest thing that we did was we provided children with an atmosphere of love. And we found that when you show children love, that you win them over, you know, because they know when they're genuinely loved. I mean, I never forget we had an experience, you know, we had a child, and he was telling us about when they went to the program at the school, how the people claimed they cared about them. But I remember the children saying one time they was there at the program and said, "Mr. Jahi, you know, they gave us some stale goldfish crackers, and she had a sub. And when she opened that sub, the aroma went through the room, and it was like, wow, why can't we get subs?" And, you know, so we had a rule. We did was whatever we ate, the children ate. I never forget the time, one time I fixed some shrimp salad. One of my workers asked me, say, "Well, Jahi, you going to get them children shrimp salad?" I said, "As long as it don't interfere with their health." I said, "We got a health form here." And I said, "Anybody that can have, you know, we had a health form that people filled out and let us know what they could, what their children could and couldn't eat. We didn't serve no pork. But, you know, we had a health form that let us know what your child could eat, what they couldn't eat, who was lactose intolerant, who could have dairy products, who couldn't. And so I went through the forms and I said, "Well, out of all the children we have here," I said, "I don't see anybody that can't have any shellfish." I said, "So, yeah," I said, "I'm going to give them shrimp salad. You better than me because they get peanut butter and jelly if they was at my program." I said, "That's the difference between you and us, is that we're not giving out peanut butter and jelly sandwiches." I said, "They can get those anywhere." And we didn't give out bologna sandwiches. So they can get those anywhere. And we used to have, like, days we had when we did roller skating, because we had a big old, our front room of our building was like 3,000 square feet, so we could clear it out and the children could skate. That's what we used to do on Fridays. We'd have roller skating, we'd do a pizza party, roller skating. Some Fridays we did barbecue chicken, because I'd grill chicken. But we found that if you gave children food, real food, you could win them over. You know, that the food is the thing that would unlock their hearts because they know you cared. And that was, you know, very, very significant because we had, I'll never forget, we had one, a young girl's parents came to pick her up and she didn't want to leave because she said, They have grilled cheese sandwiches, mine, and oodles of noodles. And the thing was, we fixed it to do the grilled cheese sandwiches different because what we would do is we take the bread and the cheese and we grill the sandwiches on top of the stove in a skillet, and then we spice up the oodles of noodles. And, you know, so that made a significant difference for them in terms of the quality. I'm saying all that to say is the quality of the food that you give the children makes a difference in their lives. That's what we came to find out. And I would say that today if I was sharing information with people that want to know ways of how to run a decent youth program, feed the children. Give them what they want or what they need or what they like. And make sure you know that you, that whatever you do, whatever you eat, they eat. And so that was, you know, one of the significant things that we really did. And we also would take children. We didn't go to King's Dominion and places like that. We would go to Harpers Ferry, West Virginia, where John Brown's raid was, and explaining them the history of what started the Civil War and how these were contributing factors that led to the development of the Americas and why there was so much discrimination going on because they never really resolved that issue. They fought a war, but they didn't resolve the issue of equality in this country. And that, you know, it played a significant role for them. And then, you know, we taught real history. You know, we taught real history. When I say real history, I mean we would go into depth about key historical facts that was glossed over in school. Like I said, you know, we did a big thing with John Brown and his raid on Harper's Ferry. I heard Tubman was supposed to meet him there, but she got sick. Frederick Douglass said, you know, hey, he thought it was a death trap. But, you know, taking the real characters in history and making sure that they understood the role that these people played in history and the things that they were involved with in their time, their lives and time. So, and, you know, Marcus Garvey, how, you know, he basically, he was sold some bad ships. But he had black people to help purchase the ships. The guy got a kickback by selling them some from the white people, by selling him some bad ships. And so the Garvey movement didn't fail. Garvey built the largest organization amongst black people that the world has ever seen. Over 6 million followers. He had people that smuggled his newspaper all over the world, to the point that when Brother Kwame Ture was in Vietnam, visiting Vietnam, and Ho Chi Minh pulled out a Garvey card. Because in the 1920s, Ho Chi Minh, when he was in America, went to the Garvey organization. And so, you know, we made sure the children understood these facts, things that you could prove and could show. And we did a real big thing on ancient Egypt, and letting them know that, hey, didn't know Hebrew slaves build the pyramids? The pyramids was public work projects. I'll never forget, you know, I had a child one time, you know, talked about the Hebrew slaves. I said, there were no Hebrew slaves, brother, young brother. And we was able to show them and document through history how the whole myth of Egypt having Hebrew slaves was a propaganda campaign to make the Jewish people look great and make Egypt look bad. So it was, again, a thing about making sure to decimate one culture and have another culture look good. And so, you know, we would go over these kind of things, and we made sure that we always, always included children in the things that we did. We gave them the right to be able to speak their own mind, speak their own special truth to the world. And I'll never forget one time we had a child. She was being interviewed by a person. And the person asked her, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? She says, I want to be a multidimensional person. And, you know, we influenced young people. I remember we have a young lady by the name of Stephanie Sears. She got inspired to go to Morgan State University. She could have gone to any college she wanted. She chose to go to Morgan because she wanted to go to HBCU, because she wanted to have that black college experience. And she got there from attending our culture center. And so, you know, so these are some of the things that young people got out of the program that we had. And I'm still in touch with several young people today. Alicia Williams, you know, she ended up ultimately going to China and taught in China. And she's back in America today and has a young son named Stokely, who she named after Stokely Carmichael. And she has another child on the way. And she's living in New York. And we communicate through Facebook, and she's always mentioning how we influenced her life so much and the things that she got from attending our program. So I would say that, you know, in terms of things that are going on, and that was like, you know, like 30-something years ago, is that quarter, I would say the generation gap is that, yeah, we did that like 30-something years ago, and young people are probably saying today, well, who's doing what now? And I would say, if anything, some of us in our generation, we didn't groom enough young people that we could pass the baton to continue the fight to fight. We were fighting so many fights, fighting so many battles that, you know, we just didn't have, I guess, that energy to groom people and do real institution-type building in terms of passing the baton. I think about Mr.
Let me ask you this, man. I know you said you fed the children, and you also, if I remember, I know you fed their minds as well. And that's how you got them to, you know, to trust you, believe in you, and follow your ways. Because I recall my children used to come on, they used to sing that song y'all taught them, red, black, yellow, green.
I know what those colors mean. Red for the blood, flows like the river. Black's for the people. And all black is for the people, strong, brave, and true. Green's for the land called Africa. And gold is for the treasures that were stole. So, yeah, you know, that song was a very powerful song. You know, it had a rhythm and a rhyme to it.
Yeah, I know, because they was, you know, when he learned that song, he came on and, you know, he used to sing it so much, man, I learned it. So, but in any case, let me move on a little bit because, you know, I'm going to get you a few more people. But like I say, Brother Satari, I could have him on for 10 hours and he would never get through all the stuff there and all the people that he influenced over the years. It still is. He's still doing it through the National Black Unity Music with his columns. But there's another soldier. I just want to bring him in because I know he has to leave because he does the show right after this one. But this brother, man, his reputation preceded him. I even met him personally. I knew all of him. This, I'm talking about Mr. Bill Gooden, my partner in the publication. Bill just had this publication called Fighting Back. But, you know, and back in those days, just like in this day and time, it's still a small circle. Those who are out there really doing something, everybody kind of know, if you don't know, you know of them or somebody who knows them. And, but Bill, you know, I know he don't like me to toot his horn, but I'm going to tell you something from my perspective. And he know I tell him this all the time. Bill is one of the most powerful men I ever met. Town, I'm talking about activists. I've seen Bill call on people and they respond. I'm talking about mayors and Congress people, big time lawyers and anything. I mean, ain't no, can I talk? You know, hey, Bill, hey, this and this, that. You know, they have a history. Because Bill was one of them type gentlemen that was out there in the streets, on the front lines. So I was behind the scenes type of person. You know, I did a newspaper and everything, but Bill was up in your face type of person, you know. And I asked him how, you know, he could get to know these people because he used to protest half of them, you know. You know? When they did act like he was up on them. And so, but in any case, this brother, man, I went to his house one day, and I just knew from his activism just here in Baltimore, Maryland. But he's got to show me some old, what they call them, not 8-tracks, but they the little video thing that he used to put in the machines. I forgot what they call them, old big things, put in to watch movies, rent movies off of them. But in case y'all know what I'm talking about, you know, it's like a videotape, whatever they call it. I can't think of the name. But then he showed me some footage of him up. Yeah, he showed me some footage of him in New Orleans. I mean, St. Louis, that's where he's from. He was activist there, helping people become mayors. He was politically active, socially activist then. And even still to this day, his brother, this last year, he was out there protesting for I don't know how many months, out there every day. Still out there at his age and stuff, still doing this thing. So, Bill, I'm going to ask you the same question, if you can unmute yourself, sir, is this. First of all, why do you do the things you do, and why are you still doing it?
Well, you know, first, let me just say good evening to everybody. And, you know, just real quick, in terms of time, because I know it's after 8 o'clock and you have several people on here. You know, I always say, listen, you know, first of all, I believe that everybody should have a purpose in life. I mean, I'm going to die believing that, right? And if you feel that you have a purpose, then I feel like you should know that you have an obligation to try to fulfill that purpose. You know, so sometimes your purpose drives your mission, right? So I'm driven to do what I do because I think that we're supposed to try to leave the world better than when we found it when we got here, right? So, you know, I mean, so basically, in a nutshell, that's who I am. I mean, I'm an activist because I believe that that's my purpose, right? I couldn't find, you know, I think that everybody has to find value in life, right? You know, and we have to find value in people. Well, my value in life is being active. My value in people is that how can we change the conditions that we live in, right? So we can't change the conditions that we live in if we decide to not do nothing but take care of ourselves. Now, you know, some people comfortable with just saying, listen, I'm going to take care of myself and my family. You know what I'm saying? And for them, and look, that may be their mission. They may feel that they're helping the world by just raising a good family, you know. But, I mean, some of us, our families expand farther than our personal family. Our family is the world. Our family is brothers and sisters that's on here, right? So how do we help each other to have a better life? How do we help each other to not be afraid of each other, right? So, I mean, so in short, Dave, that's what I'm all about. And you know, and I'm going to just close with this. Like I say, look, there's so many ways that we can lift each other up. You know what I'm saying? But the real question is that, do we truly want to help lift each other up, right? Because, you know, we have grown into this society that people got pockets where they do what they do, right? But, you know, if you're not among the status quo, then a lot of times you're working. And I say this, baby, and I use it for example, right? You know, I said, Dave, you've been out here 4 years fucking straightening, right? But you don't get recognition. You know what I'm saying? Even though before this technology came out, you know, even before people could go to the Sun newspaper, the Afro, or Baltimore Times trying to get their story told, but you know they could come to? David Murphy, because he wasn't from the mainstream, right? So we have to start recognizing, we have to value each other's work, because everybody has a place, right? Just like the time just got through, right? Listen, you know, that whole thing was with children, right? But they have a place, you know, you have a place in terms of what you do. But how do we all come under the same tent and support each other so we all can grow? And I always been about that.
All right. And you know, you hit something right on the point. You know, I open up with just saying that, you know, I'm talking about black folk, black people. You know, each generation seems to, you know, or even blame the other generation for not doing enough. And vice versa, you know, and the older people, we complain they don't do enough. That's all, you know, they don't know the struggle that we've been through. And they got all the advantages in the world, but they won't even take it. You know, like I used to tell people, you know, they would lynch us for reading if you knew how to read. I mean, they would ask the kids, man, you got libraries and internet books all over the place, and now our people won't even pick up a book. You know, all this is available to you. You know, and I have to believe. You know, I this is what I believe. And y'all could, you know, everybody has their own opinion, but I believe systematically through media, because that's my field of expertise is media, and I do know how powerful media really is. That's why the National Black Unity News is extremely important public, not because I'm involved, not because y'all is involved with it, but because it's in the arena of information. And information is power. And this event, just before this thing last week, a couple of weeks ago, my system got shut down. Just now. Soon as 7:30 hit, my system went down. Now I got one computer on the same system is operating and the other one's not. Now that's a real style. I mean, that's a new one on me, but see, that's technology for it. And I'm telling you something, Mr. Murphy, my brother's on there now. He would say, you know, every time he would get on the call sometime, the system would act up. And the reason why we don't have a lot of people on these calls anymore, because I don't give people the information how to get on the Zoom call, because we got bombed several times. Bombing means that somebody would come on there, cuss you out, and put all kinds of negative pictures and stuff like that on the site. So I'd be very selective who I would send this invitation to come out, you know, because otherwise we'd be So, but see now, because we are making noise, and even I tell people all this, I've been watching and been watching for years because I have a tool that can possibly cause trouble. I can start trouble with a newspaper. I can say this and I can say that. I can say I heard through reliable sources about any one of y'all. And half the people who pick the paper up and would read it would believe it. It could be the biggest lie in the world. That's how powerful media is. I thought so. Just because I put it in the press, in the media. And that's what is being done to us every day from our children. That's why people like Satabi is so important. They had to give them another point of view. And we can't trust the school system to teach our kids, because you know what they teach them. They don't teach anything about themselves, how to survive. They teach them how to respect those them, learn about their history. But that's another thing. But like I said, that's why I believe God raises us up, because everybody, even animals, know how to take care of their own. But yet, because we've systematically been penetrated psychologically, mentally, even spiritually, things have been hipped upon us that no other race of people I think never went through before. Black people all over the world being treated the same way as Russia, China, anywhere we go, it's like a fear factor about something about us that makes people uncomfortable around us. But yet, from my perspective, we are the most forgiving, the most loving people in the world. And the most creative people in the world, because how in the world do we survive what they did to us, what they left for us, scraps and pieces of this and pieces, and we still here? Every door that was open to us, when we enter in and we excel that, they know this now. And so they do have a real fear of us taking back what's rightfully ours. But that's not here today anyway, but, you know, anybody can just jump in here now, because I just want to, you know, because this generational thing, what solution would you suggest anybody can jump in so that the older people can give back? Because the worst thing can happen to a lot of us on here is to carry the wisdom and knowledge to our grave, but not give it to you. See, my children, even my children, are interested in what I do. But just last week, a young lady came up to me and said, I want you. I've been looking for someone like you. I want you to mentor me. And see, sometimes, like, you know, like I say, a prophet, sometimes the old saying, I'm not saying I'm a prophet, but never welcome in his own home. So sometimes we look for the wrong people to pour our information out. Sometimes it's somebody that will be around you sometimes who have an interest in what you do. Grab them, pick them up, share that information with them. You know, like I say, the worst thing that happened is for us to carry this stuff to our grave. And I've been looking for somebody, and I don't have no problem. I don't have no fear, no what you call competition. There's enough room for all of us out here. But I do know one thing. If we don't tell our young people our stories, nobody else will. If we don't teach the millennium what we've been through and what we did there, if we don't teach our own children, when they jump back up and feel grown sometimes and act like we don't know, sometimes you need to let them know that you do know. You need to tell them. Put them in check, so to speak. And these younger people, now I hear them say this now, but you know, but I'm from this point, that's why I'm giving an event so that I can introduce each generation to each other and show how significant we are to each and every one of us. The baton has to be passed from each generation. That's the way the cycle goes. But we can't, and we're the only people that I know of. Now you got Asians and everybody, Jewish people. They respect their elders because they are taught to do so. They are taught to honor their ancestors. We have taught to be, you know, just the opposite. And so it's nobody going to do for us what we have to do for ourselves. So we have to let our young people know the significance and the sacrifices we made for the previous generation. Because otherwise, they're going to hear from somebody else. And you know when they hear the other story from the other people, how are we going to look? Because like I say, right now, what we were taught, we were just slaves. That's it. Slave servitude. Even to this day, when we go to school, they say, leave here and go get a job, serve me. Brother Leroy, you want to say something?
Absolutely. I want to piggyback off of what you were saying, if I can. It is true that we need to teach the younger generation, and I've said this several times before, that we as what I call us the now generation, we've dropped the ball in showing the next generation what true manhood is and what true womanhood is. But here's my thing. There are those of us out here, like you, Brother David, like everyone that's on this call, this is preaching to the choir, so to speak, because we know these things. We're doing those things. And we have to keep beating the drum of here's what we need to do, or not what we need to do, but here's what we're doing. Because if we keep putting in the mindset of the younger generation or the generation that's now that we're not doing it, then it takes away. Well, see, that's what, you know, that's why they're acting this way, or that's why they're acting that way. It's like, no, we have to say they are those of us who are out here beating that drum and showing the next generation the way to go by doing the things that we're doing, not only in the modeling of our lives, but like you said, Brother David, is sharing our knowledge, sharing our experiences, because that's the only way that they're going to learn. But then they also think about when you were in your 20s, teenager, and you think you weren't listening. Most of us weren't listening to nobody. We thought we knew everything, and we certainly didn't believe that our parents knew anything. We thought we knew more than our parents, and it took us, some of us, you know, longer than others to be able to learn the lessons that we've learned. And as we've gotten older, we've come to understand, yeah, mom, dad, grandma, granddad, they were right about what they tried to teach us. Mm-hmm. You know, some of the things that they taught us weren't the right things. But I think we have that understanding because they did. They kept talking to us in spite of the way, you know, in spite of the way that we might have gone. They still kept into us those good habits, what I'll call the good habits that we have now. And honestly, that's, to me, that's what we have to keep doing. We may not think that it's working, and for some it's not, because we're not going to reach everybody.
That's right.
We're not going to get all of them. But if you get that one or two that gets what we're saying and says, you know what, Mr. David, you right about that. I'm trying to do this, or I'm trying to go that way. I'm trying to be this way. You know, then it's worth it because we're constantly, we can see that the things that we are saying is resonating with some of them. So we have to realize that the more we say it, then hopefully the more of them will catch it, and the more that we will catch with what we're saying. But at the same time, they have to be open to it as well. You know, they have to be open to learn those things that we're trying to tell. Because back in the day, you would have the older men would be, let me talk to you. Come here for a minute. You know, and we would stand there and listen. We would literally stand there and listen to them and take the wisdom that they gave us. And whether we used it right then or not, it remains to be seen, but it was at least something that was instilled in us, that was put in us, because I tell you, each of us can tell you all the things that we've said, because we're repeating them now in our lives. And I used to always think it was so funny how my aunts and uncles and them, they would always just be telling stories or saying this and saying that. And I find myself now doing the same thing that they did, reminiscing, talking about this, talking about that. I'm like, this is what that was. It was telling us stories. It was pouring into us those things so that we could learn, so that they could be instilled in us. You know, repetition is the only way that we get to be able to understand and to grow about things. And we should approach it that way when it comes to these young men, these young women, and being able to go, because and trust me, I get just as frustrated because I when listening to some of the conversations that these young men and young women have, or seeing them, you know, on social media and stuff like that, you'd be like, oh my, I'm like, what in the world have we done? You know, we've created these monsters, And we wonder what's going on. So we just do. I truly believe that there are more of them that are listening than there are that aren't listening. We just seem to have the light being shined on those that aren't listening more so than the ones that are listening. Because I think that there are more positive men and women out here, than there are negative men and women. And that goes for each generation. I think that there are more positive people than there are negative people out here. But we as a society, we as a world, we as media and everything else just tend to focus on those negative people that are doing negative things out here. And it's harder to reach them than it is to reach those that, you know, maybe out there and doing some things, but you can reach them, or they may be out there and they're just quiet and they're laying in the cut and they don't say much, they don't do much. They're just going about their lives, listening to what their parents say, listening to what their aunts and uncles or grandmas say to them and everything like that, you know.
Yeah, and you know, you hit it right on the head, because there was some adults, most of us our parents. You ask them a question because I told you so. It was just straight up. But then that one, like you say, that brother or that aunt, the one was always, come here, boy, let me tell you something.
Yeah.
Sit you down. They the one you tend to like the most and stuff like that, you know, because they share information with you. And we love stories. I just love sitting around my grandmother and them, man, and hearing them talk about when they was young, the things they used to do. I couldn't believe it half the time. I had to do some things. But, you know, I had a great imagination. But even some of the guys from the corner, like you said.
Yeah.
The guys used to be drinking wine and stuff. They were pushing.
Mm-hmm.
Come here, boy. Let me talk to you. Let me holler at you. You know, even though they may not be, filling the spot, but they would still give you words of wisdom.
Right.
You know,
right.
You shouldn't be doing this. You shouldn't be doing that. And I think part of this, like I say, I've tried to be solution-oriented, is that we as seniors now need to open our arms up more. And be like those aunts and uncles say, come here, boy, let me holler at you. You know, have them arms open instead of, looking down on them and turning your heads on them and discuss and say, like you say, look at that monster, what we created, because they are our children. And you're right about that. They came from us in each generation, because we got a little spoiler, And like I say, but it's not all our fault, it's part of our fault. They're our children. But like I said, we are being bombarded. We are being misled, miseducated, and a whole lot of other things by a larger society. But it's still up to us. And that's what I'm, attempting to do is in my circle, in the circle that I have, is to bring all of them generations together so they can be more of an understand, more open arms, so that, so the young people, you're doing, and you're still doing that? Before a year, they can't even imagine, because like you used to say, them stories, boy, 20 years ago, I couldn't even imagine that much time. That was just like 40 years, but I couldn't even, hell, 18, you're talking about 40 years. I couldn't imagine that span of time, period. But you're right, but anybody else, because we don't have that much time left. But, if you have a solution, because like I say, this video, it's not a lot of it on, but what does happen, like Brother Satai, we have a format, and I have it on several, groups and organizations, and all week long, they be things circulate. And one thing about these formats now, once they're out there on the internet, it goes viral, and you never know where this information, who's going to land on. And so if you have something that you would like to share, Vernon, you're a younger man. Well, you got anything you want to share, sir? You have to unmute yourself, sir. I know he's at work, so he may not speak right now. But anybody else, while we still have some time left, would like to share some of your wisdom and knowledge, because there's a lot of young people, the millennials and even younger, may just hear your voice and you may disturb them.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead, Vern.
Yeah, I kind of like agree with everybody here. What has happened is the changing of culture. For the millennium, media has tried to when I was growing up, and of course, they, when you was growing up, we heard about the, you talked about this earlier, the bridge, bridging the gap between the ages, you know, the age differences. And I think media is just, you know, kind of like separated, made a bigger gap,
yep.
Make a big bridge, you know, talk about, well, you know, in culture, in our community, we elders mean something, you know, but in America, elders don't mean anything. You know, in some cultures, the elders don't mean anything, you know. You're who you are as a young person. You're smart. You don't need to learn anything from anybody that's older than you. You know, and that's not the case. You know, there's always something you can learn from an older person. And you guys should look at it as an older person, but a person that has experience, you know, that's done things for 10 years or 5 years or even more, 20 years. You know, they're just an expert. You know, like now, you used to have apprenticeships. You know, you want to learn how to cut hair or do that. You'll just go work in somebody's shop. Now, you got to go to college. You gotta go to a school to learn, you know, these trades and stuff, when you can just work side by side with somebody, and then you go take the test. Now they want to see, you know, you spend all this money and disconnect, make a disconnect with other people in your community.
Wow, you know, you hit on something real powerful, because you're right. Because if you want to learn something, if you want to be a carpenter, you saw somebody in the community, you hang around that man. Oh, why?
Yep.
You be picking up. And if he saw that you had an interest in what he was doing, he would share it with me. You know, come here, boy, let me show you this, you know. And my brother.
And work with him. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and work with him for a couple of years, and then say, look, you really want to do this, go down to the state office and register your company. And then he was a carpenter.
That's right. And my brother, he has a strong interest. Mr. Murphy, Walter Murphy, if you unmute yourself, because he something been burning on his heart lately about what I came up to was the trade school. You
right.
know, and see, I wasn't what you call academic, you know, I was sharp in school. It was boring to me. And so,
right.
But until I went to the school called 452 in Baltimore City, and they let me put my hands on things, especially when I got in that electrical shop, I would never go to school. But when I got in that electrical shop, I went to school every day because I loved it. You know, I just loved getting, you know, in the wires and stuff, man, and schematics and, you know, planning and stuff, man. I mean, I couldn't wait to get to school. But Mr. Murphy, you know, that's another thing that has been taken away from us. You know, a lot of the trade schools has been shut down. A lot of the, even the, you know, we used to have what you call music shop classes and stuff. All of that stuff has been taken away from us. You know, when you go to school, you pick up the little rectangles, little sticks and everything. From day one, we would learn little things. Some of us got really into them and became musicians and stuff, you know. But now they can say recreation and everything else, they slowly but surely taking it away out of the system, and all you learn is academic. I know people like Dr. Y.T. had taught generations and generations of students in English and stuff like that, and I know some of them come back, and I wish I was her student now, you know, back in the day, because now here I am, a publisher. English is extremely important in this industry. But see, if I knew down to what I knew then, so I'd have know what I'm dangling participle bars or something. You know that. Because it didn't make sense to me back then. But nobody took the time to explain to me why those things was important. It was those type of people would just say, because I said so. But if they explained why you say so and what the importance of it, maybe it may have made a big difference. But Mr. Murphy, while I have you on here, you was had this thing about these trade schools, and so
oh,
what's
dude.
Up with that?
Oh, there's a lot going on with that, David. As most of you guys know, first of all, hello to everyone. My name is Walter Eugene Dempsey Murphy, and I am the managing director for the National Black Mission News. And I got to tell you guys that this is a hot topic right now because of the fact that, of course, you know, we're talking about our kids. We're not talking about some kids around the corner, or we're just not talking about the kids across the block. We're talking about our kids. And if you don't own them, please embrace them because they're going to be around you eventually. And the way things are going now, our kids are not in one little small vacuum. It's just like some of you guys, you're reaching the entire planet for some of the things that you're doing right here, right now. And so just know that these, some of these kids have had a lot on the ball. But the deal is, it's like any other energy. If it's not challenged in the right direction, it can go awry. It can be, I mean, devastating to a lot of people. What people can do, any one person can really change the lives of one person or really beings. And that's the way we are. We're built that way. And the key is like I was talking about earlier, just trying to find a way to get to our children to let them know how important it is about who they are, where they come from. Mm-hmm. How did they get to be where they are right now? And a lot of times they don't have a clue simply because there was no one around to tell them. Our society has been one that has ostracized the family, especially the black family, and especially if you're a poor black family, and especially if your family had anything to do with the government any time before 1950. It devastated you because there could be no man in your household if you were getting something, federal government assistance. So, you know, it's things like that that have really devastated our kids. And then secondly, during the civil rights movement, and especially in the late 50s, a lot of our counterparts saw how valuable it was to have a marketable, portable skill. Being a carpenter, a blacksmith, a iron worker, a man can work with stone, a man can use his hands, a man can use his brain, and anything that had to do with STEM. In fact, we're talking about science, technology, engineering, and math. But even the art has something to do with it, and reading has something to do with it. Mm-hmm. Reading is a skill, ladies and gentlemen, because if you can't, a lot of things that you're trying to accomplish will not be accomplished. So all I'm trying to say is this, is that there is something about our youth that a lot of people don't understand. And I guess it goes along with this old fable about the elephants. Young bull elephants, these valuable young bull male elephants, running through the village like it was nothing, tearing up stuff, no discipline whatsoever. And these elephants was really kind of almost on the tinkering of getting killed because of the fact they were doing so much damage in the village. And so what these villagers wound up doing was, hey, let's get smart. They went out and they found three old male bull elephants, put them in the herd, problem solved. And that's what happens to our society. Normally when a child is exposed to wisdom and knowledge, they suck it up like a sponge. So it's our responsibility, ladies and gentlemen, to put it out there. Just don't give it up. And and as far as the CTE training, as far as vocational technical training is concerned, I believe that every child should have a little bit of that in their background. That way they'll always have a marketable skill. Back to you, David.
Oh, man, powerful stuff. Like I say, this is solution-oriented. Because now, you know, like I say, as I try to teach, I'm an elder, and I do try to teach, but I'm also always a student. And sometimes, you know, we get caught up in some of the things that we do, even myself sometimes, you know. And I have grandchildren. And they, like you said, they are sponges because they watch everything you do and listen to everything you say. And not only do they watch, they want to line it up to see if you what you're talking about is lining up what you're saying, you know. Are you doing the things that you say you're doing? And so, you know, we have to be very careful when we're around our young people. Because when they see us act up, you know, you do it, I can do it too. Matter of fact, I can do it better than you. You can make a mess up better, but at the same time, like we were talking about earlier, those aunts and uncles and no older folks who open their arms up, who sit you down, who show love. Because that's one thing a child do recognize. And that's what my children, I was talking about Brother Satari. That's why they ran to him, because they saw love in them. They didn't see no fear. And they saw it. They felt it. And that's why my son, that second day, he just ran on into place. And all his life, I had to run away from him. But when he was a student, I say, all I'm saying is we have to, you know, not only our skills, our talents, but we have to show love. instead of getting angry with our young people. And, you know, sometimes they'll take you there. You know, I can walk around the corner from my house sometimes, and these young guys, you know, the ones on the corner, think they tough and think they that. I done been there and done that to you. But they don't know that, hey, they call me, hey, y'all, want to buy this and buy that? And I keep, you know, reminding them that I don't use the stuff. But every time they see me, they would run up to it, and I would get frustrated. Then one time, I instead of me getting frustrated and getting angry, trying to go on their level, wisdom finally set in on me. I pulled a few of them up. Said, come here, let me holler at you. And I said, first of all, you didn't know who I was or where I come from. You didn't even know if I was a police or connected to a police. That I could have you locked up. Then again, do you know I've been living up in this area? I probably knew your grandparents, you know, and which I probably did. That's where Emerson Village was. And then I would tell them, I expressed to them, I'm not trying to hurt you. I'm not trying to down, you know, down you or put you down and think, man. I care about you, man, you know, and you know, it's dangerous what you're doing. And just that, and you know what? Just like butter, they will begin to melt. And the same few guys that I pulled up when I used to go back around that corner, and them guys would rush up to you. Hey, they, you know, those same those guys that I spoke to, they intervened. No, he ain't like that, man. Nuh-uh. Leave Uncle alone. He's cool. And see, you know, and so when you give, you get. And when you invest into our young people by just showing love and giving them the wisdom that they like you say, they're sponges. They're waiting on it. They look for it. Because oftentimes we know it. We know. We see what's going on. We see what happened in the 60s when the drugs took over and what happened to not only the men and the women. And it still has long-lasting effects on all of our lives. And we know that half these children are not being raised properly. I see my friend Hazel Hunter on there. On here. Now, she had a daughter, but, you know, she put her blood, sweat, and tears to make sure. I mean, she stayed on her daughter, but now her daughter finished school, got a good job, and doing wonderful things now. But she had to put in some serious work, and most people were not willing to do that. Most people would only give them no time, give our children no time. So if you don't have children, But I love the National Black Community News because we had sisters like Dr. Y.T.'s who loved to share information with poor children all their life. And then we had sisters like Kathleen Murphy who just loves children. And she got a book or something, she's going to get it into them. And if you give her a moment with a child, she's going to end up telling what school you be going to. She already has the knowledge.
Yeah. Mr. Murphy?
Yes.
You're right about that, but I want to share this, if I may.
Yes, you can. Go ahead.
You can reach the youth. You can reach them if you really want to. Some time ago, I ran a family business. It was a corner grocery store in the midst of a drug active area. And when I went into that environment, I didn't know a whole lot about it. I just had not had that experience. Well, over time, I got to first know the families, and I realized they were just families trying to make it. But this one particular family had two boys that continually would be in and out of the prison system, jail, in and out. They would come in and out. And I remember when one of them would come out, they would celebrate. When that day they would come to the store and buy little sodas and drinks and snacks, and they would celebrate that one was home. I didn't understand that. In fact, initially that bothered me. Why are we doing this? And that sort of says we're praising bad behavior. I'm thinking in my way of not understanding everything. But I've said many, many, many times that going into that environment humbled me. Because I needed humbling at that time. So this one particular young man went back to jail. And I don't know at what point I decided to do this, but I decided to go out and purchase magazines and a Bible. And I ended up finding someone. Back then, this happened back around 2000, so I was able to do this, where I found someone from my church. That I found out that he was working with the local prison. And, oh, boy, when I saw him on that truck with the city truck,
I thought, he's my end. I can get these books and magazines to this guy through him. And I ran him down in church, and I did that. I went out. What I did, I bought magazines that I never would have purchased. The ones with, like, wrestling. I bought sports, the nice ones that young men would buy. The sports, about sports, I bought, you would know the article, the one that was called The Source with the music industry. I bought all of those, but in the middle of it was the Bible. And what I did, I knew that family well enough to know that they had not been introduced to many things as far as Christianity and the Bible and all. So I went through the whole Bible and I highlighted verses and tabbed them for him. And I put them all in a packet and got them sent to this particular young man. He couldn't have been any more than 20 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And it got to him. And so much later, I don't know if it was a year later, but it was a good while later, he got out. He brought me flowers. That was not our relationship. We didn't have that type of a relationship. But he brought me flowers. He was thanking me for what I had done. And years later, I found out that he is successful. He has his own barber business. And he's thriving. He's doing quite well. He was the same age, as a matter of fact, he was the same age as my son. Yes, he was. Didn't have the same advantages. Grew up in a single parent setting for years. And there was a larger family, and they were struggling. And so I say that to say, if you really want to reach them, see, he changed me. I didn't change him. That young man changed me. And that's all I want to say. Thank you.
I am so glad you said that, because, like I said, this event I'm giving, it seemed like it's not to me, because I did a lot of things in the past, putting things together. But just listening to this whole conversation we had tonight, I'm more determined than ever to bring this to get all of those sectors together. The people who've been around the block once or twice, the ones who come behind us, and the younger ones, and introduce each other. And because like you said, you never know what happens after that when the seeds start getting planted. Who's going to say what to somebody? Who's going to share that story? Like I said, I'm going to give everybody 5 minutes. And, you know, in that 5 minutes time, you can say quite a bit. But to let each other know what each other person is doing out there. But like that story you just said, that's a powerful story. And Brother Leroy, man, this you just took me back, man, to even your own family members. Because I remember when I see how I felt, how angry I used to get when they told me, because I told you so. You know, there was no answer. You know, I mean, you know, they wasn't no out to that. But with that aunt and that uncle or that elderly person come to sit me down and tell me why. Because you can do this, could happen, this, that. Then that made sense to me. But you know what else it did? Back in those days, it made me so comfortable with that person. Because it showed that they cared enough to even explain it to me. They didn't have to do that. And so, you know, I've learned a lot from this conversation, and but I do know that we just misunderstood. You know, we misunderstand, just like I misunderstood people over 30 when I was a teenager. And like Brother Leroy said, when you're 21, 20, you can't tell nobody that much anyway. Your mind, you know, you it. but time takes care of that. The only time takes care of that. but during that time, you can still plant seeds into a person. You still drop that knowledge on them, that wisdom on them. And then when the time comes, just like reading the Bible, when it's time for them words to come, to thought, you know, just like now, I still recall craziest stuff back, you know, way back when I was 18, 19 years old, certain situations come up, that person, that situation, that talk comes right up, and it brings to remembrance. And that wisdom sets right in. And that's why God said he writes words on your heart. And so that the blessing that God put on each and every one of us, it's not just for us, for our own being. But, you know, like I say, we have to share, invest in our future generation, plant seeds. And that's how nature works. The survival of their own. They do anything to keep their survival of their own going. And for us, as a people, We have to invest into our youth, into our the generation beneath us, no matter how old and how much they think they know, still pour it on them. And I want to thank anybody have any parting words, because, you know, we passed it never, but this, they can say we control this time. And unfortunately, again, I got cut off soon as things stopped. So I'm going to have to look into this way. And, you know, when you block one road, you go around and find another one. And so, but in any case, I thank each and every one of you for your time, as always. And your words will not go, you know, come back void. So thank you, and good night.
Good night.
Well, take care.
Good night.
And matter of fact, we'll be on tomorrow night. We got a special guest that's coming on the Tuesday night call, so please be available. You don't want to miss that. All right, thank you.
Good night.